Good morning.
Good morning.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
My name is Celeste Carey, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, your community connection here in the metro area. It's 90.7 in the Columbia River Gorge. It is 91.9 in the Willamette River Valley, 100.7, and in the ether, it's KBOO.FM. I love that look you gave me.
Yeah.
You got an announcement?
We do.
Okay, somewhat, good. You read yours, I'll read mine. I think I have two of the same.
Okay.
Yep, I do.
It's the same. Okay.
Okay.
It's a Heart of Healing presents Village Dance Convergence, a benefit for the Physicians for a National Health Program, which takes place Friday, November 6th at 7 p.m. at Village Ballroom, 700 Northeast Deakin Street. Come join your community for free-form dance, food, conversation, live music, and many more healthy activities to benefit community health care solutions. Electrifying sound of DJ Raku and more. This evening program will take dancers on a journey through a musical landscape that stimulates the heart and spirit into greater vibratory awakening. I like that.
Oh, I do too. Hey.
This is sponsored by Physicians for a National Health Program. It's a nonprofit research education organization of over 17,000 physicians, medical students, and health professionals who support single-payer national health insurance. So that takes place at the Village Ballroom Friday, November 6th, 8 p.m., a benefit for universal health care reform.
Yes, and if you don't know where 700 Northeast Deakin is, it's just east of Deakin and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. So you can take the 6, among other buses, to get there.
Okay.
I know there's another bus, but I don't know which one it is. All right. Well, that was a perfect segue. So you going to do it?
Okay. Well, joining us this morning for a very important conversation, which is on the hearts and minds of many people in this nation, healthcare. Joining us this morning is Eleanor Hinton Hort, who is the president and CEO of the Black Women's Health Imperative, which brings more than a quarter of a century of experience of managing programs and advocating for policy resulting in the elimination of health and educational disparity among women, girls, and communities of color. We welcome Ms. Hort with us this morning and value your conversation and insight with us this morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having us.
Yes. Well, there's so many different ways we could approach this, but there's a couple of things that I wanted to just start with. And one of them is the fact that with all of the efforts at trying to promote health reform among voters and among our legislators, there's a couple of groups, or one group in particular, that it seems that everyone has forgotten to address, and that's women. And I understand that with the new bills that are being proposed, there are a lot of potential benefits for women in those bills, one of which would be just that maternity care itself would be guaranteed by insurance companies. They couldn't charge higher premiums for women, for example, who might need a cesarean, claiming that it was a pre-existing condition. But given the fact that there are these potential improvements for women's conditions, why is no one targeting women?
Actually, and thank you for asking that very important question. Actually, many of us are targeting women. We have been working with other women's organizations, Raising Women's Voices, which is a coalition of three national organizations. The Imperative itself is part of Women of Color United, and the Black Women's Health Imperative here in Washington, D.C., has been actively involved in making sure that women, particularly women of color and low-income women, get the kind of health care insurance that we need, as well as health care, not just insurance, because we know that insurance is only part of the problem.
Yes. That's so true. But even so, some of the polls, one by the Kaiser Family Foundation, a survey back in September, said that it was only about 42% of women thought it might be a good idea. Now, has that number increased? Has awareness of the potential benefits for women increased?
I think that that particular poll demonstrates the problem that we have had in making sure that we separate facts from myths. During the past 9 months, almost, since February 1st, there are many of us that have been working with legislators at the federal level, with the White House in particular, in making sure that women are included in this healthcare reform. And I think that what we haven't done as well as has been to make sure that our constituents understand what the real facts are. But recently, I must admit that the Women of Color United, which includes three women of color organizations, along with the Black Women's Health Imperative, has made tremendous strides in bringing this to the attention of our constituents. In fact, tomorrow we're having a national call-in day that speaks to where we're asking women to call into their senators to make sure that they let them know that this is an important issue for all women, particularly women of color, and that we really need health care reform that works for us.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. We're speaking with Eleanor Hinton Hoyt, who is the president and CEO of the Black Women's Health Imperative, which is a national nonprofit educational advocacy and leadership development organization for to help eliminate the health disparity that exists for Black women. And perhaps we can also talk about the health imperatives for women. You have, I think, five or so imperatives that's very important for you. Maybe you can share them with our audience.
One of the things, and before sharing that with your audience, I think that it's very important that we understand that what we're trying to do, and this correlates with our basic principles, is that we're trying to end gender rating. Many of us are not aware, and this is a fact, that insurance companies charge women more, not because of anything other than the fact that we're women, because we use the healthcare system more because we're women. And so we have been able to work with the White House as well as with some of the congresspersons to put in the healthcare reform bill one particular issue, which is gender rating is discrimination. And so we're ending gender rating. And so the second issue that is very important to women of color and women generally is that pre-existing conditions would be eliminated, that an insurance company could not deny us insurance because we have been a victim of domestic violence, as about eight states and the District of Columbia insurance companies do, or if we've had a cesarean. And so that is in the health care reform bill. As you probably are aware, that previously, your insurance would end after your child reached the age of 20, 21, depending on whether they were in school or not.
Right.
We now have extended that to 26. That would be a tremendous break for our children, and particularly for young women who tend to be paid at a lower level, and often for women of color, they're on jobs where they do not get health insurance. It is not because we're not in the workforce. It is how we are in the workforce. And so the inclusion, once again, we're still pushing and we're trying to do a national push tomorrow. And if you will, I'd like to share that with your audience. But we're trying to push once again for the public option. And I understand that there are about 55 votes for the public option. And so it's back on the table. And I would ask that your listeners dial in to 877-264-4226. This is a toll-free number where you can call your senator, ask for your particular senator and congressperson, ask them to pass a health reform bill that will work for women of color.
Could you repeat those numbers again, please?
Yes, please.
Absolutely. On Tuesday, October 27th, the Women of Color United for Healthcare Reform is hosting a national call-in day in support of real health reform that works for us all, but particularly works for women of color. And the number is 877-264-4226.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that information. And in addition to making that call, is there anything else that we should do to kind of push forward the notion that this public option is the only option for us right now?
And that's very important. Write your congressperson. Join other organizations who are working hard to make sure that we let the White House and Congress know that this is the status quo is unacceptable. The time is now for us to be accountable. It is not all right for our constituents to have to go to emergency rooms and not only go, but then go and wait. And if they are served, and often they are not served, they don't get the kind of quality care. And so that public option allows for many of our constituents to have access to medical care, particularly a medical home in the community in which they reside. I think that's very important, and that is a fact that the White House, as well as some of our Congress, have supported our recommendation that we make an investment in the public, in our public hospitals and our public community health centers, so that our constituents, and particularly the urban poor, can have affordable and ready access to care that is being provided by people that look like them who are adequately trained and culturally competent. So I think that it is important to get the facts, join organizations and efforts such as the one that we're having tomorrow, the National Call-In Day, but also more importantly, organize in your local community and seek meetings with your congresspersons or encourage your friends and family to write your congressperson and tell your story. Send a story to me, Eleanor Hinton Hoyt, at the Black Women's Health Imperative. Go on our website, www.blackwomenshealth.org, and tell your story, and we will share your story with the White House as well as with Congress. So those are some of the things I think that your listeners can do to help us make sure that the kind of health reform bill that comes out of the Senate in particular is a health care reform bill that meets our needs in the community.
As you suggested that there are about 55 votes in the Senate for the public option, now it's very critical to get 60. One of the votes that is very critical voices is the senator from Maine, Olympia Snowe, who has stated that the public option is not something that she would vote for. She and a couple of other women senators have been hesitant to advocate for the public option. Some Democrats, the senator from Louisiana and I believe Nebraska, is there any effort to influence these women senators in particular to support the public option?
Thank you for asking that. We have been trying very hard. What we've done is that we have called on our constituents and our members to write op-eds and to send letters to their staff as well as to the senators. This is, as you know, very political. Olympia Snow is playing a critical role, but we are trying to place op-eds in papers in North Carolina, in Maine, in Arkansas, and as well as in Florida, so that these senators, Kaplan, Snow, and a few others in North Carolina, I can't remember her name right now, the senator now, but they are key to making sure that we can get the kinds of votes that will make this a reality.
Can you address what some of their concerns are, some of the better of their concerns, so that people who might either share those concerns or think that there might be some legitimacy to their hesitancy could know what the truth is, as you said, separating myth from reality?
Well, one of the things I think that people are concerned about is, and this is part of the myth, is that employers will be penalized. Now, in a form of the bill, you will find that there is a penalty for employers because employers are being mandated to provide coverage to their employees. Now, of course, this works for and against us. It works for us because, as I said previously, many positions are filled by low-income women, poor women, and women of color, and they are not offered health care reform. So this is our opportunity to support women who could not otherwise afford insurance independently outside of employment. But at the same time, it works against us because employers are lobbying strongly against this kind of mandate, a mandate for insurance coverage. And that is why I think the public option works to our advantage. What you have to realize is that the Congress is there. The congresspersons are there because of their constituents. And many, many constituents do not believe that they should help pay for insurance or care, or they should not be concerned about people who cannot afford insurance or who visit the emergency room. What they have not considered is that the major cost of health care in this country is as a result of the misuse of the emergency room. So if we could get insurance coverage for most people, if not all, then, and as well as identify a medical home for people, that is a primary care physician where people could be attended to at appropriate hours that are accessible and available to them, whether it's weekends, evenings, early morning, then they would stop using the emergency room where they're not getting the best of care and the kind of attention that may be needed in order for them to be well.
In other words, they won't be using the emergency room as a personal clinic because
and
that's the only option they have.
Thank you for helping me convey that sense. They would not be using the emergency room as their personal health care source. Absolutely. That personal clinic. It is for emergencies and not for general care.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point that you bring up. A lot of people may not realize that. When I was doing my practicals for nursing school, I found lots of people, especially elderly people, would come to the emergency room as a clinic because they knew that an emergency room could not turn them down. The problem, as you said, was if they had long-term chronic illnesses or long-term care needs, they didn't get long-term care follow-up. They would only have someone see them for that particular episode of, you know, their health crisis. But that was the only place they could go that they knew someone would see them.
Absolutely. And what we have to do a better case of relating what an emergency room is and the cost of providing service to the status of the health conditions of individuals, of communities, as well as the status of health care in this country. The United States ranks about, and I always forget this, but I think it is about 34th of all countries. We're behind Cuba. Now, something is wrong with that in terms of the kind of care that we provide, not what we spend. We're probably at the top in terms of what we spend, but it is the quality of care and the kind of care that we provide in this country that we rank, the United States ranks 34th. Now, something is wrong with that situation, and that is what we are trying to change, how we can get affordable care for all, and the willingness of the people. And see, I think in order to get a health care reform bill to pass this time that will work for most of us, I'm convinced that we're going to get a health care bill passed, but one that works for most of us, that's affordable, accessible, and available. And we forget that availability is key to many of the urban and rural poor, then it takes not only the White House and Congress, it takes the public will.
That's right.
Have public will where the general public will support this.
So public will for the public option.
To do what is right.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city. This is More Talk Radio. I'm here, Celeste Carey, with my co-host, Cecil Prescott. We're speaking to Eleanor Hinton Hoyt. If you would like to speak with her about your concerns or issues for the public option, please do give a call. The number is 503-231-8187. And one of the things I'd like to ask, well, actually, I have two burning questions. I'll throw them both out there, and we'll just kind of focus on one of them at a time. The first one is, for a lot of people, maybe there's some level of dissatisfaction with even trying to support the public option, even though that's all we have, because in their mind, the issue still should have been single payer, and we've been hoodwinked or there's been a shell game. And so I still continue to hear people feeling that to vote for the public option is still unsatisfactory. Do you care to address that?
I'm not sure that I understand clearly what the issues are exactly with public option and versus what we have now. One of the things that we are trying to do is to make sure that affordability is key. I've seen the polls where the general public has indicated that they're satisfied with the insurance that they have, with the care that they have, and I don't know who they are talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Our constituents are not satisfied. Now, I know we're not representative because blacks only make up about 13% of the U.S. population. But we have also a general audience, and as I said, we're part of Raising Women's Voices, which is a collaboration of white and other women of color groups, where we have taken the issue of raising women's voices for healthcare to communities. And so the public option is often, I think, related to Medicare and Medicaid, whereas the general public does not want to support people who do not work, cannot work, and cannot afford what they believe that they can afford or they believe is their work ethic. They are not clear on what the facts are. And I must admit, I'm not as clear on the public option because it has been taken off the table, which even though
you mean single payer has been taken off the table.
The public option was taken off the table for a couple of months in August.
Yes,
it was
right.
taken off the table.
Right.
It has just been put back on the table last week.
Right.
As late as last week. Now, what that means is, as I understand it, and remember this has just been put back on the table, and what the Congress is trying to negotiate now is that there will be a health insurance exchange with a public health insurance option. And that insurance exchange will include both private insurance company plans as well as the public option for individuals and small employers, those small employers that previously it was under 50. I think it has been extended now to about 100. And I can find out about that if you have some listeners who are small employers. Mm-hmm. And so this insurance exchange will find ways for individuals and small employers to find and purchase affordable health insurance.
We are speaking this morning with Eleanor Hinton Hort, who is the president and CEO of the Black Women's Health Imperative. They are a national nonprofit advocacy organization, and they are calling for citizens, people here to take part in a national call-in day tomorrow to call in. That number, again, is 877-264-4226 to call and ask your representatives in Washington to be supportive of their concerns and for a public option. Ms. Hort, a lot of people are confused around many of these issues, as you have suggested, but I think bottom line, what you have said that is important is that too many people do not have health insurance, and that what you are advocating for is that as many people are covered as are possible, that insurance is affordable, and that people do not be deprived of health insurance because of so-called pre-existing health conditions.
Absolutely. Thank you for repeating that for me. And it is pre-existing conditions, the gender rating, as well as placing a cap on out-of-pocket expenses. We are trying to eliminate all of those. We're trying to make sure that there is a cap placed on out-of-pocket expenses. We're not trying to eliminate. We're trying to put in a cap so that if you have a major illness or operation, that your out-of-pocket expense would be capped at a certain rate, depending on that. And one suggestion was at $5,000. Mm-hmm. And this is so important, and this is underplayed often, but as many of your listeners know, that one of the major problems in this company now, in this country now, as it relates to bankruptcies, is that most people go bankrupt because of their medical expenses.
Yes.
So having a cap of your individual out-of-pocket expenses, deductibles, and copays capped at $5,000 certainly protects American residents, and the other one, as you mentioned, is it prohibits discrimination for pre-existing conditions, and this is real important for women. that we have to understand that if we've had a cesarean, and many, many of the young women today are having cesareans, that if we become pregnant before becoming an employee and then join a company's group plan, that is, we could be excluded because of a pre-existing condition. If you've had breast cancer, on Friday, the First Lady, I was with the First Lady, who was bringing attention to the conditions and the cancer, breast cancer survivors, who told stories of once they've had cancer, breast cancer, they have been dropped from their coverage, as well as they are not able to get coverage for their treatment and care after breast cancer. And breast cancer often is as a result, once again, of being a woman. Not it isn't directly related to behavior. And also, as I said, in 8 states and the District of Columbia, insurance companies exclude victims of domestic violence. Mm. Now, this must stop. Mm. This is almost inhumane. That we would live in a country that would deny women in particular coverage because they are women.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you is how are they going to what kind of language are we going to use to determine what a pre-existing condition is? Will the insurance, or rather, will the public option address the language that's used, or will it just wholesale say, regardless of how your health state is, you will be acceptable for insuring?
And that's a very important question. Thank you so much for bringing that up. This is what we are pushing for women. And if women get this kind of coverage, then everybody, children and men, will benefit.
Almost definitely, because women make most of the health care decisions.
We cannot continue to have our insurance premiums, our ratings, and our exclusions based on pre-existing conditions. So the language now, and this is in the bill as it exists now, I don't know, as I said, about the public option that this particular bill that we are pushing excludes pre-existing conditions,
okay.
As well as it excludes gender discrimination in pricing, and it excludes a dropping or watering down coverage for the seriously ill, particularly those women who have breast cancer.
And those are very important points that I think as you continue to push, as we all do, push our legislators to come up with a health reform that is acceptable to all, that those are bottom lines things that are important, that gender discrimination that people will not be denied insurance because of pre-existing
conditions.
as well as affordability. One thing that's so important, I think, that your organization plays an important role, is to continue to share with the public why women are so disproportionately affected by the current health system that we have. And one point that you made that I read that I did not know that I said I can't believe was the issue around domestic violence.
Yes.
And being denied that because of that. So you continue to advocate and educate.
This is, and most people don't know that, and we really have been trying to get this out with our town hall meetings, with our radio show that we just launched, with our email alerts, that it seems being it is the whole notion of being a woman prevents you from getting quality good care unless you can really afford it, and so there are many conditions I think that insurance companies have identified that discriminate against women, particularly because it's called gender rating. And so what we're trying to do is to develop, with the public option in particular, to develop a level playing field whereby and promote access to health as a human right, that it is that in a country like the United States, this should be part of our value system of providing opportunities to be well, to get the kind of care that everyone has, and to make sure that our young, our children, have access to dental care. Here in the District of Columbia, in the broader District of Columbia area, a 12-year-old boy died from a tooth infection because his mother was dropped from Medicaid and couldn't get dental care. This is unacceptable. We should never have another child in this country dying from a tooth infection that led to an abscess. Last week, a young child was denied health coverage because she was too fat. That was in Colorado. Another child in another state was denied health coverage because she was underweight. Insurance companies are indiscriminately making up rules in order to ensure that they have the kinds of profits that they need so that they can be well. And so we're trying to put a stop to this and say that this is unacceptable, and these are rights. Dental care, dental parity, and mental health parity are part of what we need in order to be well in this country.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio. We're speaking with Eleanor Hinton Hoyt about the women's health care options and parts of the public option that's on the table right now. You can call us and ask her questions to understand better how to support the public option at 503-231-8187. And we'll go to our caller, Dan, who's been waiting. Thank you, Dan. Good morning, Dan. Okay, we got the kick not good signal from the engineer. Dan, please try again. While I have this opportunity, I want to kind of shift gears just a little bit, Eleanor. One of the things that I'm concerned about as a former healthcare worker and as someone who, I guess it was maybe about 3 months ago, we had a healthcare collective on here at KBOO that was addressing the broad base of healthcare needs by minority communities. And one of the issues, as you mentioned, was it's not just health care, it's quality of health care, it's accessibility of health care. And one of the challenges for communities of color is that the health care that we have is based on health care needs and statistics of the dominant community, of the white community. There are a lot of health care modalities that don't necessarily benefit us as they should. Will this bill, this public option, in any way start laying groundwork to both address that disparity as well as start the groundwork for capturing information to improve the modalities of healthcare available and effective for people of color?
I think so. And I think previously you asked me about our principles, and we said we'd come back to this. And two of our principles address this. Last week or 2 weeks ago, I spoke before the National Institutes of Health Office of Research for Women's Health on the need to address this issue, the need to make sure that the kinds of research, the kinds of testing, the kinds of treatment are appropriate for women of color, and particularly for Black women. If we take something again like breast cancer, and I continue to bring that up, and domestic violence, because this is Breast Cancer and Domestic Violence Month. And so we are really pushing this. But previously we had an assessment tool called the GALE model that you may be familiar with in terms of assessing a woman's risk for breast cancer. After 10 years of operating, we found out that it missed many times the invasiveness of breast cancer in Black women. And so they have revised those models. And so we're pushing absolutely for developing standardized measures for collecting, monitoring, and reporting data on health disparities. It's really difficult to identify what those modalities are and the different kinds of tools and risk assessments are if we don't have the kind of data, if we don't collect it and accurately report the kind of data that is needed in order to address this. So we are pushing in this public hearing in Chicago at Northwestern University. That was one of the things that I and the other four panelists pushed, is making sure that we get the kind of research and data that address women of color generally. And one of our principles that we are promoting is developing standardized measures. Now, the other principle I think that speaks to this is how can we, and it isn't directly, but how can we guarantee that vulnerable and underserved communities have access to that culturally and linguistically appropriate care, with special attention to, for us, it would be the unique needs of Black women and girls, such as breast cancer, the pervasiveness and the high mortality rate of breast cancer for Black women under 40, whereas insurance companies will not pay for mammograms for these women, and therefore they're dying at a very high rate, even though we have a low rate of morbidity of breast cancer incidents. And so the other, I think, issue is that we're asking for an investment in prevention and community health services that would allow us to address some of the social determinants of health, and then relate these to some of the standards and testing and care that is being given to the majority population, so that we will know exactly what the issues are for poor people and people of color.
Which the bottom line is, once we address those needs and we make some strides, it really improves health care for everyone.
Absolutely. We strongly believe that, that if we can get a bill that says we eliminate gender discrimination, we eliminate pre-existing conditions, we put a cap on out-of-pocket expenses, that there should be no charge or minimum charge for preventive care. We need our mammograms. We need our pap smear. There is that possibility that we could wipe out cervical cancer if we had preventive care available for all women. And then we need to improve Medicare, improve the coverage of prescriptions, reduce the time. Many seniors will take half a pill, or, you know, reduce their dosage, or delay their getting their prescription filled because of the restrictions on Medicare, and the limitations on Medicare. And so We're asking for increase of Medicare coverage. Make it more humane so that seniors in their last should-be golden years have access to the kinds of care that they need, but also to the treatment and maintenance that they need with their prescriptions.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Celeste. I'm here with Cecil, and we are both here with Eleanor Hinton Hoyt, and we're speaking to supporting the public option as it has information and provisions that support health care, especially for women and women of color. And we have a call to action. And Eleanor, I'd love for you to repeat that information and what you would like people to do, and share with us any websites you may have that you'd like people to visit. I visited a couple of them myself, but I think it would be helpful for you to suggest this to folks so that they feel energized, connected, and activated.
Sure. There are several websites that are important. RaisingWomen'sVoices.org is one. Women of Color United for Health Reform .org is another one. And that's www.WomenOfColorUnitedForHealthReform.org, www.RaisingWomen'sVoices.org, and Black Women's Health Imperative, www.blackwomenshealth.org. These are three major websites for women of color, and what we try to do is to keep you informed, connect you to the links, and make sure you have the information. We're also having a national call-in day tomorrow. Call in 877-264-4226. Ask the operator to let you speak to your senator, identify your senator and your representative before going on the call, and tell your senator and representative who you are. Tell your story of suffering, of not being covered, of not getting covered, of being denied coverage, or waiting too long in the emergency room. And tell them that you are part of the group that's demanding the healthcare system that works for all of us. This is very important. Ask them to pass a healthcare reform bill that includes a public option to ensure that all of us have affordable, quality healthcare.
And we have another caller here on board. Let's try to get to our caller before we go. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Yes. Thanks.
Yeah, my name is Patty. I just wanted to comment, just make a few comments. I'm a lactation consultant, actually, and I have no health care. I have my own business. A lot of women don't know there's a program. It used to be called Susan B. Cohen Foundation, but now it's just called the Breast and Cervical Program. And I thought it was through, you know, America, United States, but maybe it's just here in Oregon. I get my free Paps and mammograms. And my doctor out in Troutdale didn't even know about this, so I hooked her up with it, and I just get a free card. Even if you have insurance, like I had insurance like 10 years ago, but my deductible was $5,000, so I couldn't afford to go in. So they will pay it then. They will pay it free. So I wanted everybody that's listening to know that is out.
Yes,
actually,
that is so true. This is out of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They give money to states in order to provide breast and cervical cancer screening. However, for Black women, Patty, they don't qualify for those Black women who are under 40. So what we've had to do for those Black women who are under 40, we've had to make appeals to private breast surgeons to provide those mammograms.
Well, I'm 57,
Pointing that out. It is true. In many communities, and it should be across the United States, if the state has applied for those funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, you can get
Eleanor. She had a follow up question.
Cervical cancer. You can get your screenings free.
Eleanor, she has a follow up question for you.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's discriminatory, absolutely, because I'm 57 and I get this, and that is I've never heard of that. And I'm, by the way, I'm going to ask my OB. I'm going to ask her if they see black women. Anyway, another thing is my daughter, she's 24, and she's got this, I don't know what it's called, you probably know, it's the cancer cell, you know, from having sex really young, and a lot of girls, I think it was mandatory for girls in Texas to get the shot to prevent it, and then they thought
the
that it...
HPV, the carcinogenic cell.
Yes, my daughter has that, and right now she's excluded from insurance because of that, and she hasn't even had a baby yet, so... You know, this is there's really has to be something done with this, and I can't help her. I can't pay for her high deductible insurance.
This is very important. And what the bill does as it stands now, that is a pre-existing condition, and so that would eliminate that. And so if the bill passed, or when the bill passed, let's think positively, she will have access to care.
Okay. All right, thank you so much, Patty, for your call.
It isn't just black women who are excluded. Insurance companies do not pay for mammograms, or does this program by CDC cover any woman under 40 years old? Because previously it was 50 years for women, and it was First Lady Hillary Clinton, and I was working with the National Council of Negro Women then, who pushed for it being lowered to 40, and now it's 40. And so what we're hoping to do is to push for it to 35.
Well, thank you so much, Eleanor, for all your work. And if possible, we'll try to check in with you later after all is said and done, and when we're celebrating, so we'll know what the next steps will be.
Absolutely, because there will be next steps. We won't get it all, but we will. I hope we have a chance to talk to your listeners again.
Oh, most definitely. Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
And go ahead.
You're listening to KBOO and More Talk Radio.
And really briefly, here's my announcement. I didn't get it out here. Local Leaders Institute coming up Friday, November 6th from 2 to 6 p.m. and Saturday, November 7th. From 9 to 4 p.m. at the Curious Comedy Venue. This is an option for anyone that lives in a community who wants to improve their opportunities for addressing community issues and get skills and trainings. Please call for more information, 503-823-4235. That's 503-823-4235. Ask for Lauren McCartney and register now. There's a small donation suggested or volunteer hours available for a scholarship, but this will take your leadership skills to a new level so you can make real change, make impact, and become a true community leader.
You've been listening to More Talk Radio. We'd like to thank our guest, Eleanor Hinton Hoyt, and coming up next is the OMO Variety Hour, and we will see you next week.
And we'll hear you, too.